So is it the best 50-minute podcast?
Well,
or 30-minute?
It's the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. And people are always like, ooh, it's over 30 minutes. And I'm like, yeah, but only 30 minutes are actually high quality. Hello, and welcome to the CultCast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Irfan Elijah, and I'm back with the most fancy British person I know, Leander Caney. Welcome, Leander.
Hey, Buster. I'm sorry.
You can call me Buster if you want.
I don't know why that came out of my mouth.
Well, remember last time you called me Barfon because you were trying to combine Airfon with Buster. We've done this show for so long that now you're just combining our names.
Right.
We've got a new guy joining us, Corey, a.k.a. at With Hearts on Twitter. And Instagram With Hearts too. On Instagram too, right?
Boom. Yep.
And I'm psyched to have you on, Corey. We've been talking about doing this show for a while. And Corey, if you haven't checked out his Instagram page, you should do that. Instagram.com/withhearts. What are you at now? About 206,000 Instagram followers?
Yeah, just about there. Yeah,
he's just a hair
right
off.
On the brink, you know.
So, we've been wanting to do a show for a long time on iPhone photography, maybe a little photography in general. I know a lot of you guys out there are interested in that, and I am too. And actually, Leander, you've been getting really into Instagram.
Yeah, I've become addicted to it. Like, you know, of all the sort of social things, I can never really get into Twitter nor, you know, Facebook either. But Instagram, I really enjoy.
Yeah, and you've been posting, I would say, more reliably than either me or Buster. So we wanted to have Corey on. He's going to tell us all about the iPhone photography apps that he loves, how to create a good image. All his tips and tricks are going to be given to you here today in hopes that you can become a better iPhone photographer. And exactly. I'm really interested, too, to hear what you have to say, Corey, because I've actually been following you on Instagram for... Dude, I don't know, like maybe 6 or 8 months.
Crazy. There you go.
Yeah,
so you've
been
tracking along. Good.
Yeah, for sure. I don't even remember how I stumbled onto your profile, but your pictures were really great. And so I'm excited to talk about that. And actually, also, I want to mention, some of you may notice, Corey and I are from the same city. That you wouldn't have noticed, but we're kind of voice twins. The first time we talked, I was like, you know, people always tell me that I sound like a surfer. But you kind of sound like a surfer.
I'm rad, you know?
Rad, bro. Yeah, so you guys might notice two surfers on one episode. You get
against one British guy.
Against
there you
one
go.
British guy. I do want to mention this episode is sponsored by the fine folks, our longest time sponsor at DigiDNA.net. We love those guys. Oh, I love those guys. Makers of Discade 6. Discade 6, the best way to transfer videos, documents, and other information on and off your iDevices with ease. You can download voicemails, call logs, photos, videos, anything else right to your computer, all via Wi-Fi, all without long iTunes syncing. That's the power of the new Discade 6. How do you like that intro? I wrote that. Leander?
That's great.
You were so taken aback at my organization that you just didn't know what to say.
I was like, what?
You're like, wow,
no,
that's actually really professional. So, hey, if you guys want to try out Discade 6, I recommend that you just give it a shot. It's free to download. Go to digidna.net and you can check it out. Hey, I want to start with some iTunes reviews. You know, we never talk about these. We have so many amazing listeners that are leaving us good iTunes reviews. And for the longest time, I've been telling people, if you leave us an iTunes review, we're going to read them on the show and thank you publicly for stepping out amongst your peers and admitting that you listen to this show publicly. And then even further, saying that you think it's actually good. So I'm going to read a couple of them real quick. This one comes from Chad Mobley. He says, I absolutely love the show. I listen to it on long drives in between jobs when working. I also keep up on The Verge's video podcast, but nothing compares to the CultCast. Thank you, Chad. And let's see here. Carrie Kinn. Oh, my gosh. Is that a female? It might be. Truly the best podcast on iTunes. I think that's right. Nothing better than starting your day hearing these guys laugh for 30 minutes trying to squeeze in some Apple news in between. I think that succinctly describes our show.
That's about it. That's right.
Thank you both for leaving those really kind iTunes reviews. As you guys may or may not know, iTunes reviews really help us a lot in our standing on iTunes. So if you like our show, if you want to leave us a 5-star review, that would be great. You can do that in iTunes. Maybe you want to leave us a 1-star review. I'd say don't do it. Just don't do it.
That's right. Don't even bother. Some
of the
time.
If you really hate the show, go to the Verge's page and leave us our iTunes
in there.
Review. Yeah.
Troll in there.
Leave your complaints there.
Yeah, leave your complaints on the Verge.
That's right. Make sure it's 1-star.
Yeah, leaving 1-star reviews there. Don't leave them on our page. Come on. The Verge is they can take it.
Yeah,
hey,
yeah.
Let's talk about Google Glass. I want to know a couple things. A, why would anyone want to wear these stupid glasses?
I know. I was talking to a friend yesterday about him. He was saying, yeah, people who wear them are called glass holes.
Glass holes? No. I was joking on Twitter. I wasn't on Twitter. I said that I think Planned Parenthood should issue these things to male teens as contraceptive devices.
Because
yeah, right. If you're wearing these,
proof.
You are going to be abstinent.
Right.
So
instant purity. There you go.
The purity glass. That's how they should rebrand them. Hey, look, I jest. Some people are like, dude, don't be a hater. If Apple released them, you would buy them. That's true. If Apple released them, I probably would buy them.
Yeah.
But I don't get these things. I mean, they look ridiculously goofy, first of all. And other than that, do you guys see a future where people are going to be walking around with these interactive, you know, glasses on their face like they do with iPhones?
I personally don't. If anything, I think the Apple Watch is such a better, like, design-wise. You know, it's not in your face all the time. You don't notice the person's wearing it. And, you know, they can interact that way. But the Google Glasses is just kind of – just makes me not want to wear glasses and, yeah.
Oh, that's right, because you're glasses wearer.
Yeah.
So you're their demo.
I have to, like, make glasses that work with those glasses, like, or, like, double up, I guess, or something. I don't know how that's going to work.
The Google Glass glasses. Well, actually, Leander, before I go to you, let me read you this. So the reason we're hearing so much about this again is Sergey Brin was just at the hugely popular TED conference, and I just found this out. Those TED conference seats, $7,500 a piece. Mm-hmm. $7,500 a piece. So he was there wearing these goofy glasses and talking about them, and he said a couple things that I thought were really interesting. So I'm going to read you this little blurb from the New York Times article I'm pulling this from. Sergey got on stage Wednesday at the TED conference in Long Beach, California, looked down pretending to use his smartphone, and then he said, "This is why we created this form factor." He said, "Rubbing the screens of buttonless and knobless phones was strange. It feels kind of emasculating. You are just rubbing this featureless piece of glass. There isn't anything to feel." And then compounding that statement, he said they wanted to create the Google Glasses to prevent social isolation. How ironic is that? Because when you're wearing these, you will be friendless.
No one can see what you're seeing either.
Exactly.
That's
so,
right.
I mean, do you guys see a future for Google Glasses? Leander, let's go with you. I mean, do you?
Well, it's right. Those comments he made were strange because he's denigrating his own product. I mean, he's sort of saying that, you know, like, you know, he's talking about Android phones as well.
Yes, exactly.
As the iPhone. And, you know, I think the functionality is interesting and actually kind of useful. Like, you know, I like the idea of being able to video whatever you're looking at. And, you know, as you know, like how GoPro cameras are so popular,
yeah,
you know, the helmet cams and stuff like that. And of course, you know, there's a, you can sort of see this kind of Russian dash cam kind of, you know, those really surreptitious videos.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can totally see like how it would be useful to record what you were seeing and make video recording really, really easy. But like you say, you know, you got to wear the dorky glasses. And I don't think I can see people getting around that. I mean, it's, I think maybe that if they had, like, you know, I think people might put them on like they put on sunglasses. Like they might put them on for special occasions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they might put them on when they're going for a bike ride or if they're going to go to a concert or something like that. You know, something they want to record and where they want to get the information. I don't know if I can see people wearing them all the time. You know, it's just too much. It's just too dorky. I mean, there was a really good. There's a bar right over here, the Shotwells. It's only a couple of blocks from the office here. Mm-hmm. And the bartender was saying that three or four people came in wearing Google glasses.
You're joking. Said, three or four?
No, I'm sorry. It was a couple. A couple came in, a guy and a woman, and they were they ordered their drinks, and he started asking about the glasses, and he was ribbing them, right? He was kind of trying to push their buttons and sort of saying, you know, don't you feel idiotic in those, and uh-huh. and they just wouldn't even engage at all. Like, that, no, it was totally normal. They were, you know, they wouldn't let him draw attention to the glasses. They kind of just ignored his comments completely. So, you know, I don't know, maybe that's what you got to do. I mean, I think people were skeptical. You know, people have been skeptical of all kinds of technology too, right? You know,
that's true. Yeah, I mean, people are skeptical, especially of cutting edge technology, which this is. But do you see a practical use for Google Glass? Is there a practical use for it? I have a hard time coming up with a scenario in which I'm like, oh yeah, that would be really cool.
If Siri worked, you know, you could see it, but you could do this with a watch as well. And I think Corey's right there. The watch, I think, is more natural. Mm-hmm. It would be much more natural to talk to your watch, you know, like Dick Tracy, than it would be to sort of like be talking to the glasses. But I think if Siri worked and it could interact, you know, with a whole bunch of sort of cloud services, like I saw an interesting talk as well that people sort of you're starting to see Google. You know how Google works? You put in a bunch of keywords and you get back a whole list of different choices, and mm-hmm. then you have to go and choose the right one. Well, someone was saying that Siri, you know, like you actually ask Siri for an answer. You say, like, Siri, how tall is Everest? And it'll say, you know, 29,000 feet. It'll actually, it doesn't give you a list of choices. It gives you an answer. And that's a fundamentally different way of interacting with a computer. And, you know, like, so if Siri worked, then, you know, it could be a natural way to interact with Siri and get, you know, sort of, it would give you text answers or auditory answers, you know, into your ear, or a text answer in that little window. So I could, yeah, you know, I can imagine a use case for it.
Corey, you were saying earlier you think you'd rather have an iWatch.
I would, yeah. Why would bracelet.
why would that? Why is that more appealing to you?
For me, I don't want something where someone thinks I'm viewing a different thing than I'm actually viewing.
Yeah.
So if I'm wearing these Google glasses, I'm going to have like a screen that's going to make me look cross-eyed and like, because I'm focusing on this like weird thing in my corner of my vision.
I hope that's true.
And walk around and like stumbling into things. Like, I don't want to be riding a bike and like be like watching a movie, Netflix, streaming like the same time. You know, I want to be like in the moment. And like the iWatch is something that you can interact with, get like, you know, push notifications, all that stuff on this watch, but yet still be engaged with the world around me. Notice Instagram shots, or, you know, still be engaged with the world, you know.
That's so interesting that you should say that, because that's like the opposite of what Sergi's saying. He's like, oh, hey, you know, that watch is isolating. Your iPhone is isolating because you're constantly staring at it, right? And you're not still able to interact with the world around you because you're focusing on this device that's either on your wrist or in your hand. And I'm like, gosh, if you have those glasses on, yeah.
It's the most invasive thing.
It's always in your face. I mean, everything mm-hmm. is happening right in your face all the time. I think people think that humans are evolving to be able to multitask better. I think we're still a couple million years away from that. Yeah,
like, women are better multitaskers. But
they're better than we are. That's true. But I don't think anyone is miraculously good at multitasking. You know, like generally people are good at doing one thing at a time. Your brain isn't multi-threaded. That's why texting and driving is becoming illegal everywhere, because people aren't good at it. They're crashing their cars into pedestrians. Exactly. Imagine if you had freaking Google glasses on and all of a sudden, you know, a telephone call pops up while you're in your car and it's your mom and she's yelling at you, Leander, and you're like, no, mom, not again, mother.
Or video chat. On screen.
Exactly. She's yelling at you about something and you crash your car into
right. I can totally see that happening. Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. Yeah. You don't want to have the world mediated by a piece of glass that's going to distract you even more.
And let's talk about the other angle of it. I mean, is the, like, one of the things they're touting is the live streaming feature, right? It's always taking pictures. It's always recording audio. Do you want somebody in your face? Let's say I meet you in the morning. You haven't showered. You know, like, you're looking pretty haggard. And all of a sudden, this guy shows up with Google Glass on. It's taking images. It's recording things that you're saying.
Mm-hmm, right.
Do you want to talk to anyone who's wearing these?
Yeah.
I don't. No, I mean, yeah. I'm like, get those things out of my face. I'd probably slap them off their face. Really aggressively.
Sergi,
I would slap Sergi right in the face. So I just don't get these things. Like I said, I know there's a lot of people out there who are really excited about them. Several of my friends, one in particular, every time I say something bad about Google Glass, I feel like I hurt his feelings personally. And he gets really upset. And I'm like, I'm not trying to hurt your feelings. I just think these things are really dumb. And I don't know why everyone would buy them.
Life's not so exciting that you want to record it all the time. You know what I mean? Like, just be boring. It'd be a boring live stream. You know what I mean?
How about you? My life is.
my life, you know, it's not super eventful. You know what I mean? Like,
no, I'd love to watch.
I post like Instagram photos, but you know, day to day, I'm just staring at a computer.
Exactly. I could watch 8 hours of me staring at my iMac.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, be awesome.
Especially for us guys working at home. Well, actually, I guess that's true. I mean, even if you're at an office, it's like you're staring at a computer all day. It sounds like really boring television.
I thought the Chromebook was more, I'm much more into the Chromebook than I am into the Google Glasses.
Yeah, that
new
cool, the Pixel
cloud
thing.
Machine they've got. Yeah.
I only read a little bit about that. Do you want to talk about it at all?
Yeah, it's a lightweight sort of MacBook Air knockoff.
Yeah.
That just runs a browser, so there's no built-in apps. Everything's done in the cloud.
Oh wait, this is the same one that came out years ago.
Well, this is the Chromebook Pixel, so I guess it's like their kind of MacBook Air version.
Oh, and it has okay.
You can get one with a built-in 4G connection and LTE radio,
which
you know.
Good,
so
yeah,
that seemed pretty good. So it's got a touch screen. So it's kind of an interesting hybrid. It's kind of like
gestures, yeah.
Yeah, like Windows Surface, but whereas Windows Surface is sort of like a tablet come laptop, this is more like a sort of laptop come tablet. It skews much more towards the laptop with some tablet features. But I thought, you know, it's like it's an interesting take on this, you know, on a hybrid machine and it's purely cloud. So, that I thought was like, at least it's kind of more interesting than what, you know, the other PC manufacturers are doing with just turning out the same old sort of variations on the laptop that really haven't changed for decades. This is something, you know, kind of new.
Yeah. I definitely applaud the innovation.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, at least they're trying new things.
Probably has a bunch of problems though. Like battery life is about 3 hours, and it's like crazy expensive. It's like $1,400.
Yeah,
it sounds like a great product. Down. All right, well let's talk about this topic because I think this is really interesting. We have some things happening here in the U.S. regarding copyright that are really kind of new, and it might change the way things happen on the internet. So, have you guys heard about the ISP's new six strike? Alert strategies they're going to be using for people who try to download illegal content?
Actually, no.
Okay. So let me tell you about it because this is really interesting. So all the major content providers, Comcast, Verizon, AT&T, Cablevision, Time Warner, have all pooled their resources and come up with a six-strike copyright alert strategy. And they've actually just implemented this. So if you live in the U.S., you definitely want to pay attention to this because let's say you download a lot of torrents. Let's say you like to download illegal movies or software, which tisk tisk, you shouldn't. Before, nothing really happened, right? You might get a notice from your service provider that says, hey, we noticed, you know, that somebody complained about something that you were downloading. You know, you really shouldn't be doing that. Now they have a unified strategy. And they are going to be much more invasive if they catch you doing that kind of thing. And they've all agreed to have the same policies, which is unheard of. So basically now, if they catch you, let's say you're downloading The Hobbit, right? Just came out, or it's coming out on DVD or Blu-ray soon. And whoever owns the rights to that notices that you're downloading a torrent, they report you to Comcast. Comcast will now send you six alerts. They'll send you a couple, too, that are just, like, really easy to disregard. It's like, hey, did you know that downloading movies off the internet is illegal? You really should not be doing this. They're going to be very educational in nature, right?
Yeah.
The third one, they're going to make you log in to your Comcast account to acknowledge the fact that you know that what you're doing is illegal. The fourth and fifth time, they get even more serious. So they're going to make you go into your account. you have to read through like these documents that say, I realize I've been downloading illegal content. You have to check mark a box that says, yes, I realize what I'm doing is illegal, basically admitting guilt, right? Before they'll let you continue to use the internet. So now they're starting to affect your actual Comcast, whatever account you're using to draw down the internet, right? And then the sixth time they cut you off completely. So if you get caught again, you have to either go through this arbitration process with them, or you have to somehow convince their Comcast security team. You have to call and talk to a person that you weren't the one, you know, violating or downloading the illegal content.
Huh.
Way different than before, right? Because it's much more invasive. So they're actually going to be able to penalize you now. And some of their penalty structures haven't been totally defined. So you could get totally cut off permanently, and they would not give you any type of internet service anymore.
Well, does it work across carriers?
Is this just Comcast?
No, this is all the major ISPs, Comcast, Verizon, AT&T, Cablevision, and Time Warner. It pretty much covers all of America at this point. They just announced this. I don't know if it's cross-carrier. That's a great question. But here's my question to you guys. Let's say, Corey, let's say you go to university, right? You're in a dorm. You're sharing a router with five other college students. Even in your own house, Leander, let's say with your kids, you know, like they're downloading content.
Right.
Comcast is able to hold you, not legally, but, you know, they're able to hold you responsible for what happens there now.
Mm.
So they could cut off your service based upon another person's actions. Do you guys think this is an effective way to curb copyright protection?
No.
It sucks for the users. I mean, the carriers just want to, like, limit how many people are using their, you know, their signal, you know what I mean? So, because all this torrenting is just slowing them down, you know, bogging them down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just invasive for the users. They're not going to be able to, I mean, like, cafes, they're not going to be able to, like, give free Wi-Fi now if, you know, one person that torrents their thing is going to shut down the whole cafes.
Oh, that's a great point.
Wi-Fi.
I hadn't even thought about that.
Like,
yeah.
That's going to be hard for them to really allow, like, open Wi-Fi for users or, you know, like something like that.
Hmm.
And it's really draconian as well. I mean, like, you know, internet access is one of the key utilities of the 21st century, right? It's as important, really, as electricity or gas.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, I mean, if you break the law, they don't cut off your electricity access for the rest of your life. You know, if you do something illegal
although that would be pretty awesome. They're like, no more electricity for you for the rest of your life.
Go sit in this corner.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's exactly what it's about. And this is just, you know, I presume this is coming from Hollywood, right? And the other big media companies. I mean,
probably.
They got all the money to support this bill too and push it.
What were you just saying, Leander?
Well, you know, I just sort of thinking. Do you know anyone who sort of, you know, do people BitTorrent music anymore? I mean, do people illegally download music now that it's sort of available for free to stream? You know, I mean, I know that I certainly haven't done for a long time because, I mean, you know, you have a subscription to Spotify, and you know, I think almost everyone, all the people I talk to anyway, you know, who use BitTorrent, it's because they'd love to pay, they want to buy this stuff, but it's not available. So, you know, they're forced into pirating it, which is a sort of weak and lame thing, you know, justification. But, you know, I think when you talk about these media companies, if they're pressuring Congress to put these draconian laws into place, it's often, I think, a failure because of the business models aren't up to date with the technology.
I agree. You know, I think you're right. I think that streaming services like Spotify are fantastic for pirating because they are easier than pirating. I mean,
you
make it easier and more convenient to pay for a service than you do.
Yeah, they still make money too.
Yeah. It's like, and I know they don't make as much.
Something's better than nothing.
Yeah, but something is better than nothing. And I love Spotify. And, you know, whenever I hear a new song that I want to download, or I should say I want to listen to, I will, because who downloads music anymore, right? At least I don't.
Right.
I use Shazam to to recognize what the song is. And then right from that app, I hit a button. It takes me into Spotify where I can listen to the entire album as often as I want in high quality, like really high quality bit rates.
Right. Huh. Exactly.
And I feel like that's the route I feel like Hollywood needs to go and production companies need to go. And that's the way music's going. But Hollywood is still not there yet. Like Netflix is the Spotify of like the visual medium. Would you guys agree? It's like all you can eat, really low cost per month, and they handle all the royalties. But a lot of these companies, you know, want to charge you $19, $20 for a Blu-ray or for a DVD. And does anyone want to really own movies anymore? Is there any reason to own a movie when you really just want to stream it? So, I mean, I don't think that makes pirating movies and software or whatever any more ethical, but it definitely makes it so that people feel like it's just like a lot easier. It's just easier to pirate a movie than it is to stream it somewhere. I don't want to freaking drive to the store and buy a Blu-ray. And I don't want to pay $5 to rent it for 24 hours. I mean, well, how asinine is that?
I don't mind doing that. That's okay. I mean, and usually, you know, you rent it once. That's fair enough. You know, it's cheaper than a theater ticket, you know, and you can watch it like with, you know, I watch movies with my kids like that. And I'm quite happy to do that.
Really? I have never rented a movie on iTunes. Have you, Corey?
No, if I had a Apple TV set up and it was like a one-click thing, I probably would.
Uh-huh.
I bought like a lot of stuff on like on demand and stuff like that because it's easier than going to like Redbox.
Gotcha.
You know, getting like a 99-cent thing. But other than that, I think limiting torrenting and all this stuff is just going to limit people from wanting to consume the media. It's going to hurt them anyways. So. Mm-hmm.
It's just unfortunate because there's no due process here either. There's no one that has to convict you of anything. It's totally up to the ISP's discretion on whether or not you're guilty. Right?
Well, that was a big problem with
these. Bad.
Yeah, it is. It's really bad. That was the problem with all the Napster trials too. I mean, you know, when people, there are still like 18,000 court cases, I think, of people, you know, from the Napster era when the RIAA is suing people, you know, for downloading songs. Mm-hmm. Using Napster, and that was a big sort of, that was one of the most contentious issues. It was like some woman, you know, and so she's stuck with the bill. She didn't even know what they were up to. She'd never even heard of Napster.
Oh, wait, Leander, you cut out a sec. You said some woman had what?
Her kids had been downloading songs, and she had, you know, the poor woman had no idea what they were up to.
That just points to another problem on the internet, right? Is like you don't really know who's accessing what. I mean, there's a lot of people who still don't even have secure networks. You know, like you can walk into a neighborhood, open up your Wi-Fi preferences on your iPhone and connect to an unsecure network, download some songs. Boom, they're the guilty ones. Not you, because you were on their network. It just seems silly. Anyway, hey guys, we're going to take a break real fast. We're going to come back with Corey. We're going to talk about Instagram, how to take great photos on your iPhones. You're definitely going to want to stay tuned for that. But I want to tell you guys a little bit about DigiDNA.net and their great product, Discade 6. So we'll be right back. Stick with us. Hey guys, this episode of the CultCast is brought to you by the fine folks at DigiDNA.net, makers of DiskAid 6, the iPod, iPad, and iPhone transfer tool for Mac and PC. DiskAid 6 has been totally rebuilt from the ground up to be faster, stronger. Now it works via Wi-Fi, no more plugging in with cables. So, what does DiskAid 6 do? So much stuff. For instance, download anything that's living on your iDevice, call logs, your voicemails, photos, videos. DiskAid 6 gives you access to any file living on your iDevice and lets you pull those down right to your computer. Better yet, you can upload easily to your iDevice. Let's say you want to watch a movie on a flight, but you don't want a long sync via iTunes to do so. Grab the movie, drop it on your iPad. Boom, it's ready for you to watch later. Just grab DigiDNA's file app from the App Store. You can watch that content instantly. No need for an iTunes sync. But I'm just scratching the surface of what DiskAid 6 can do. do. Give it a shot yourself. Head over to digidna.net, download Discade 6. A lot of its basic features are free to use. And if you decide that you like it, you can purchase a license. Use the code THECULTCAST at checkout. You'll save 30% off your order. Bing, bomb, boom. Discade 6. I want to thank digidna.net for sponsoring the show. We couldn't keep making these great cultcasts without their support. Thank you, DigiDNA. And we're back! Welcome back, everyone, to the Cultcast. And we're here with Leander Caney. We got Corey, a.k.a. At With Hearts. Welcome back to the second part of the show. This is when we're going to talk about all that great iPhonography stuff I was talking about earlier. It's going to be awesome. So, Corey, I want to start with how you got into Instagram, because you're actually not a professional photographer. You are a designer by trade.
Yep.
And you got into Instagram and somehow got to, you're just under 212,000 followers now. It's crazy seeing you post your images, because I get like, you know, like 2 likes on my Instagram photos. Yeah. And you get like 10,000 likes on your Instagram photos.
Dude, it's so crazy. Yeah.
How did the whole thing come about?
I started pretty early on the service. I'm a pretty savvy tech, you know, user. So when a new service comes in, like Vine or something like that, I jump on, snag my, you know, username, and then test out the service for a little bit. But I really got into Instagram because I was like sick of TwitPic. Remember that?
Oh, when I do remember TwitPic. Yeah.
Share your images, and like I wanted to like share the stuff that I was going through or seeing throughout the day. But there wasn't any good service, and Instagram came along where you could like post to Twitter and Facebook really quick, which I think really built the service. And so I got early on just taking photos of like coffee in Seattle, you know, and like sunsets, and like really no one like really used the service like they do now. So like early on. So
when you say early on, how long ago was this?
This was like, I think like a year and a half or 2 years ago.
That so, was early on in Instagram's history.
No, yeah, definitely. I mean, the community's gone like blown up. Like I remember back in the day, like you'd post a photo, if you got like 40 likes in 20 minutes, it'd be on the popular page.
Wow.
Like, yeah, it was like nothing. It was just like clockwork. Like, you could post a good photo and like, you know, I had like 10,000 followers or something. That was like, I was like, yeah, I'm like, but doing something right. You know what I mean? Like, so
you started using the service early. I think that's a great tip right there. A lot of times when you use a service early, like Vine, for instance, it's so new that they're looking for people to promote that make their service look good. So if you can hop on early and you do something that's actually cool, they will usually do what they did with Corey, which was what, Corey?
They promoted me and put me as a suggested user.
So once you become a suggested user,
boom.
Boom, baby. Likes, you're in like city.
Like heaven. There you go.
Are you still one of those suggested users then, Corey?
I'm not. So right around when Facebook bought them, they changed the model to where they're featuring more people in and out of the suggested user list. So they'll feature someone for like a week and a half or something like that to get more active community and like more awareness on other users. So I'm actually off the suggested user list. And yeah.
That's all right, though, because your photos are still really beautiful. And
thanks, man.
I think I found out about you maybe through the suggested user list, because I've been following you long enough to have seen you on there. And your photos are great. I'm a photographer. Some of you listening may or may not know that. And I use a DSLR. I take a lot of iPhone pictures, though, because it's so convenient.
It's always with you. I mean, your iPhone's everywhere you go.
Exactly. And my DSLR with my lens attached probably weighs 4 pounds. Yep. Not to mention, it's worth maybe $4,500.
Exactly.
And I don't want to take that everywhere, because I'm not into being shanked and having my my expensive electronics taken away from me by force.
Yeah.
So sometimes I don't want to carry it around with me. So One of the cool things that we did before the show is we asked a lot of Corey's followers to ask questions on what they wanted to hear from us as we were talking about this whole thing. And, of course, we also talked about it on our Facebook page on The Cultcast. So facebook.com/TheCultcast if you want to ask us questions for future shows. And the most popular question by far, Corey, was what apps do you use to edit? Because your photos are really beautiful. They don't look like you've taken them all with an iPhone. In fact, you were saying earlier that one of your most popular questions was what?
Is a DSLR iPhone.
So people are always asking you if you took it with a DSLR and then posted it to Instagram?
Exactly, which is, I don't know. There's a lot of people that are starting to do that. And I don't know. Maybe I'm just like true to the early stages of capturing the moment and posting it to Instagram. But I like just using the constraints of the iPhone. I think it's a hard problem to do. And it makes you like be more creative about how you edit and not over editing or, you know, making the photo not super. I try to like match DSLR as much as possible, but yeah.
Well, I think I totally agree with you. I don't think there's obviously no written rules, but when people take a photo with a DSLR and then post it to Instagram, I feel like that's kind of cheating because it's way easier to take a good picture with a $5,000 camera setup than it is with an iPhone.
Exactly.
So how do you approach taking a picture? Because, you know, you don't just use these amazing editing apps. I mean, you have to start from being inspired, as my guess. You take a lot of really great landscape photography shots. There's one that you took recently. It was these roads wrapping around a hill. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah, that was in San Francisco, actually.
Yeah,
Twin Peaks.
One was awesome. So take me through your process. Like, how is it that you're coming up with these photo ideas? And then once you have a photo, what are you using to edit them and all that stuff?
Yeah, so basically Instagram's built like a solid community of people that want to go and explore their city. Mm-hmm. So like early on is like I'm just by myself taking photos, and then eventually you meet other like people that, you know, want to take photos with their iPhones or, you know, go explore and stuff. So I've gone to like a bunch of cities like San Francisco, for instance, where you're talking about that photo, mm-hmm. and met up with people and, you know, taking photos and getting inspired. So when I go to a place, I'll just like try to be as creative with the surroundings that I have and with the people I'm with, and like, hey, stand here, you know, post up in the middle of this photo and it's going to be awesome, or go on top of that mountain. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just like, just be creative with the surroundings. And, so when I'm there, I'll line up the image kind of like in the square, like how I look. Mm-hmm. And then I'll just like adjust contrast, like exposure. So it's like either underexposed or overexposed, and, get the focus right. And then snap like tons of photos, like all in one like little outing, I'll snap like 300 photos on my iPhone, like, and then go through them all.
This is all in Instagram that you're doing this?
This is all through the camera roll. So I'll just snap the camera roll like crazy.
Okay. So you start in the camera roll.
I do, yeah. Start in the camera roll, snap a bunch with surroundings, be creative. And then from there, I'll fine tune it to like the most three images I like.
Wow. So wait a second. So you're taking, you open up the camera app, you take 300, about 300 pictures, and then you winnow that down to three images that you actually like.
Yeah.
Wow.
Or that I think is worthy of posting, sharing with the community. So it takes like a lot of like to get a good image, and like people are like, you know, how'd you just take this image and this it seems like it's perfect. I'm like, it took so many photos to get that looking that way. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
The right exposure, you know, sometimes it's blurry or the person was moving, you know what I mean? Or
wow,
the focus isn't right. And so, yeah, it's all about composing and getting the right composition for the photo.
And doing the work, right?
Doing the work and finding the right photo. Yeah.
I was just speaking to this one really amazing photographer, and that was actually one of the pieces of advice he gave. He said, give yourself the time to be creative. So, you know, really go out with the intention of taking a good image. And then you have to do the work. You have to find the shot. Like, you have to allow yourself enough time to enter that creative process.
Yeah.
Yes. So there's a lot of editing, though, as well, right? I mean, that's definitely a big part that I don't think a lot of people do. You know, they post up, you know, picture that's okay, but they're not investing all that time to take a whole bunch of pictures, and they're not investing that time to whittle them down just to one.
Yeah, exactly. If anything, like, I'll, like, not post that much, you know what I mean? Like, I want to be so fine-tuned that I'm putting out the best content I can, you know what I mean, and curating that. So it's not like – so I mean, like, that was, like, sharing my food or, like, you know, who I'm with. Like, people don't know who that person is, you know, that I'm hanging out with, and you know what I mean? Like, sharing my life, like, that way, like – it's cool, but it's not unique. And like, Instagram's got to the point where you have to like be unique about it, how you use it and how you tailor it for your certain type of followers. You know what I mean? Like, if I started taking photos of like over the head shots of like coffee, you know, my audience maybe won't like it as much, or portraits or something like that. But you know, if I posted a landscape photo like with crazy like sun rays, it'll get like 200K likes, you know what I mean? It's like crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So I think that's a common mistake. I make this mistake all the time. You know, you can use Instagram for multiple things. You can share your cup of coffee or your food, right? But I think the impulse is to, you see something that interests you and you take a picture and then you post it, rather than really, really taking the time to explore what it is about that scene that was really interesting enough to you that made you want to take a picture of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and definitely.
Really focusing your composition of the image upon that piece that is the most interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, anybody can use any service how they want, you know what I mean? Tailor their experience and how they use it. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm using it as if I was like an actual photographer, you know?
Well, you are an actual photographer. FYI, from everything I just heard you say.
Yeah, I just don't consider myself a photographer yet, because I don't shoot for a living. I shoot for fun, and I mean, I guess as a photographer, but I don't know, I just like getting inspired from with photography and different industries to like inspire my design, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
How you view the composition, simplicity, like taking out any distractions, or you know what I mean, like making the photo as clean as possible to share, you know, the feeling or the mood of the photo. I think that's very important. So, yeah.
Let's jump into a question that we got from that Instagram thread that you started. You were asking people for questions. This is a perfect time to interject with one. This one comes from Brooke Cardwell. How do you make your picture so crisp off your iPhone? Is it the editing or a certain setting on your phone? And how do you get your picture to fit your fancy, as in blurry, cleary, foggy enough? Thanks. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. That goes back to like snapping a bunch, you know what I mean? Like, I'll get the exposure right, and then, you know, go in the different apps that I use, and then adjust the levels, the contrast, the brightness, the ambience in the photo, and then not overdo it, but do it enough where the photo looks sharp and clean enough where I think it's, you know, it looks good. So I like the medium, so I don't like it, you know, underexposed or overexposed. I like,
which means, you know, too light or too dark for those who may not know what those things mean.
So definitely clean. Yeah.
Yeah. Your look is definitely very clean. And this actually leads into another great question from Shangri_Law. How many filter/edit apps do you typically use on a given shot? And then maybe we could just go right into, what apps do you use?
Yeah. It depends on the photo. Definitely depends on the photo. So, I mean, I can use up to like four different apps for
Holy
one photo.
Schmooks.
Yeah.
On one really? Photo? Yeah. Gosh.
Yeah, one photo. So I have, like, a process. So, I mean, if one photo, like, I'll just be like, oh, I think this will be good on it, and then I'll mess around in this, you know, this app for a little bit and bring it into another one, maybe adjust it or straighten it in another app or, you know, take out a distracting little thing in it, like a branch or something crazy. Like, you can do that on iPhone. Like, it's crazy. Yeah.
So what apps are you actually using? Let's call some out individually that you really love.
I use VSCO Cam. That one's good. That's better for just, like, snapping, like a really well-lit, like, cafe or something like that. Like, mm-hmm. there's good filters there that bring light out pretty good and make it then I'll use Snapseed to straighten the photo, adjust the levels, contrast, and ambience is a key. And then I use Afterglow, mm-hmm. which is really good for all the guest filters, mm-hmm. which I got to make one for that app, which is pretty cool. Yeah, just using that to you can do, like, clarity in the photo and adjust the levels there also, or, you know, add filters. And once you add the filter, can, you know, adjust the intensity of the filter, which is better than the SCO cam. And then I'll use Average Camera Pro, which
I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, so this one is how I get the look. I don't know if you look at my feed, there's one of the San Francisco Bridge.
Yeah.
And the water looks, like, crisp, like, so evened out. So basically you get, like, a Gorillapod or something like that. You put the iPhone there and you
snap. Oh, dude, you're using a Gorillapod.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're using a tripod also, so you can do long exposure shots on your iPhone?
Exactly. Yeah, you can do it. So it evens out the water and makes, like, a mist around the rocks.
That was a great effect in that picture, and I was really, really curious how you did that.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely long exposure, and it basically takes, like, 64 images and you know, finds the even point with all of it. So it's Average Camera Pro. It's really, really cool.
So let me just describe, or let me explain a little further what Corey was just saying. So a long exposure shot is basically a type of shot where you leave your camera shutter open for a longer amount of time than you normally would. And when you do that, it can create that effect, that kind of dreamy looking effect, or that clear looking effect with water, with clouds, with any type of moving object. It kind of smears it all together. And photographers, regular, just like camera photographers, have been using this trick for a long time, but I had no idea that anyone was doing this on an iPhone. I didn't know you could do long exposure shots on an iPhone. But if you're going to do it, the key to it is you have to have a tripod, because you have to have your iPhone be perfectly still while the shutter is open. So pro tip there. So you recommend using a Gorillapod then, Corey. Do you have, like, some type of, like, mount that you have to connect your iPhone to the Gorillapod?
There's a couple different ones. Gorillapod's good. There was one that was, like, a Kickstarter or something. Do you remember what the Glyph, I think?
Oh, the
called?
Glyph.
Yeah. We covered that.
That was pretty good. But, yeah, I've even, you know, forgot my Gorillapod or something sometimes, and I'll just, like, set it up on a rock and, like, hope it doesn't turn out blurry and, like, yeah, it's crazy. I don't know. I have too much time on my hands.
So you use VSCO
Cam, yep.
And that one you use for, like kind of like film effects, right?
Yeah, it's from a company that does a lot of actual photography plugins for, like, Lightroom and stuff. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, a lot of wedding photographers use it to, like, basically do batches of all their photos and, you know, have the same film look. It's so it's basically you just add a filter on it and it looks kind of more like if you shot it with a film medium format camera or something like that.
Yeah, I just started using that one recently, and that one was really great. Of course, my favorite has been Snapseed. Snapseed is incredible for editing images. Are you a big Snapseed user?
I am. I used to be more than I am now. I basically use it right now for straightening, tuning the image, and then selective adjustment. Selective adjustment is crazy.
Okay. Let's talk more about this. So let's start with tuning, which of course means adjusting a picture's contrast, its saturation, its brightness level. Because I do a lot of tuning myself, and one of the biggest things I always do is I turn the brightness up because I like photos that aren't as contrasty or have slightly boosted midtones. What are the kind of attributes that you adjust when you're tuning an image?
I'll do the brightness a little bit. I don't do it a lot. I'll bump up the ambience a lot too, because
which basically makes it look more even. Colorful,
yeah,
right?
Colorful and even, and then do the contrast a little bit, and then maybe bring the saturation down a little bit, and
really?
Then. Yeah, so it's kind of that muted kind of look.
Interesting.
And then
I like to bump it up. Yeah.
So then I'll the selective adjustment I was talking about is like one of the craziest filter things, because you can select what color you want to pick, and then you can adjust the brightness or contrast or saturation just for that color. So you can go in, say I'm doing a shot and I just want to brighten up the, for instance, my girlfriend, I take a photo of her. I want to brighten up her face a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then I'll, select just her face colors and then, brighten that up just a little bit, so that stands out the most in the photo.
This is a really good tip. This is something that I do all the time as well. So these selective adjustments are basically you tap on the screen, it creates a circle, and the adjustments that you make, whether it's saturation, brightness, whatever, only apply to that circle. And you can adjust how big or small you want that circle to be, and you can place it anywhere you want in the image.
Yep.
So it allows you to make an image look really good without having to edit the entire image. Because sometimes the image looks fine. You just need someone's face to be brighter, or you need some more contrast in a very specific part of your image. And this is a very, very good way to do that.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so anything else about Snapseed that you use that we should talk about?
I don't think so. I think that's pretty much it for that.
Do you feel any of the built-in filters in Snapseed? What is it, the grunge effect?
Yeah, I messed around with vintage a lot, but I would just take down the style strength all the way and then the texture strength, and it gives a kind of like muted look.
Mm-hmm.
But because you can adjust that, but I don't really add that much like texture to my photos. I try to make it as like clean and crisp as,
and naturalistic.
For me personally, natural style, for my photos at least.
You know what I found too is like after playing around with this stuff a lot, I mean, you got to put in the time, you got to put in the work, but you develop your own style. Pun intended.
Exactly. Boom.
No one got that but me. Thank you. At least Corey got it. I mean, after a while, you kind of figure out it was a photography pun.
Okay, I didn't get it.
Yeah, sorry. Eventually you figure out what your style is, and for me, I know certain settings that I always adjust just because that's the Airfon Elijah look. That's just what I like. And so that's what I end up doing on a lot of my photos. And Corey, you've definitely got a style. I mean, it's amazing, man. I think you could sell your landscape pieces. You could sell them in a gallery, I think, if you printed them.
Yeah, it's just iPhone quality.
Yeah, but you know what? For a big print, I don't really know how much it would matter. You could sell them. Have you ever thought about doing a gallery show?
I have. There's been a couple of different offers and companies that want to sell it, but... Mm-hmm. I might in the future.
Okay.
Who knows?
Any other apps that we should talk about? Or is that kind of like everything that you use?
There's one more, and it's my secret sauce.
Oh, boy. Secret sauce. Everyone get ready for this. Hope you're hungry.
It's FilterStorm.
FilterStorm.
So this app is basically like Photoshop for my iPhone. Like, I can load a photo in and... literally clone tool out like parts of the photo that's distracting.
Mm-hmm.
So really? If there's like a log or the beach looks weird or like something like I need to like even out the water, like you can adjust the curves, everything in there. So you can clone tool out, do noise reduction, and basically make the photo really, really clean.
Yeah. FilterStorm. And how FilterStorm. Much we should have been talking about how much these apps cost. All of them are negligible, like one
yeah,
or two
like
or
$5.
Even.
Yeah.
So FilterStorm is what, $5?
Yeah, I think like $5 or something.
Okay. Because that's one that I have definitely never even heard of.
Yeah, it's epic.
Okay. So there you go. VSCO, Snapseed, FilterStorm, Tripod. What else am I missing here, Corey?
Average Camera Pro.
Average Camera Pro. Afterglow. And is that everything?
Yep.
And then the time, folks. I mean, there's no cheating that. I mean, if you're not willing to put in the time to learn how to do all these things, you know, like, you're just not going to really get a knack for it or build your own style. And that's fine. I mean, I realize it's not for everyone.
Yeah, you don't need to. Yeah.
Some people want to take Instagram of their food, and that's cool.
Yeah,
but you're not going to get to 212,000 Instagram followers doing that.
Corey, do you have any publishing secrets? Like, do you publish at a certain time of day?
I do, yeah.
Oh, great question, Leander.
Boom. I post right around, like, lunchtime. Like, I should be posting when we're recording the show right now. Like, I usually post up, like, midday or, like, you know, something around that time. There's like certain times that I've noticed that get more likes, you know, for East Coast or West Coast and stuff. There's just like pro tips. Yeah.
This is lunchtime Pacific time. So it's sort of mid afternoon on the East Coast.
Yeah, exactly. People are winding down their days. You know what I mean? Type
okay.
Thing.
All right. And then what about, do you use hashtags?
I mean, I have in the past. I use them basically now to be like, creative within the photo. Like, there's like crazy different hashtags, like from where I stand, or like one of my friends doing a new one called I Am Here, where he takes a photo with a person with a huge like red flag in it. And you know, it's like basically series people do, like series of types of photos. So I do it for that, but other than that, I don't like tag like landscape or, you know, stuff like that.
Does that help you know, like you know, I mean, for ordinary people
like
me, and who don't have a lot of followers,
when I started it, like, we didn't really use hashtags, but I'm sure now, like, people search hashtags a lot more frequently. I'd suggest that. Yeah, you use hashtag, and then, you know, be consistent. You know, post photos every day. People want to see your face every day, you know, what you're putting. And if they can know that there's going to be a photo from you today, like, they'll you know, want to follow you more. And then also engage with the community, like, you know, engage with the people that you like and ask them questions. So, you know, a lot of times, like, you know, if there's a cool question, like, I'll totally answer it. But if it's like, where is this photo? And like, is this DSLR iPhone? Like, you hear that so much that it's almost to the point where you like don't want to answer. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Totally. And what about, you know, captioning? I mean, do you do anything clever with the captioning? Or
I try to keep it like pretty straightforward, but like I'll do some funny stuff sometimes, but I like just simple captions. I'm more simple than a big, huge paragraph. Like, yeah.
And is it possible to overpost? Can you post up too many pictures in a day?
Yes,
yeah,
you can.
You'll spread them out. Yeah, definitely.
I unfollow people. If I see them posting more than 2 or 3 times a day, I usually unfollow them.
Huh, yeah. 2 or 3 times a day?
Yeah, it's annoying because it's like I had this one guy who I was following, and he would just take pictures of everything throughout the day, and the pictures weren't even that great, and it was just filling up my feed, man, and there's no way to unsubscribe from it.
Yeah.
You're like, wait a second, Airfan, didn't you just unfollow me? I recently noticed.
Yeah.
No, Leander, you're not bad at all, but some people just post way too much.
Oh, I posted 2 or 3 in a row. I know. My daughter told me, don't do that, you know.
Yeah. She'll probably know. Yeah, you want to spread them out like throughout the day, like at least 3 hours, you know.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Something.
Or if you post 2 or 3 at one, I would say in one group, then don't post for the rest of the day. Like, just stop there.
Yeah. Or even like spread them out, like post tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? One of those photos tomorrow, like, there's no need to like post all of them right when you capture them. You know,
that was actually
going to
be something that I asked you. So you do latergrams, right? Like, you take a picture and you might post it several days later.
Yeah, because I mean, I want to work on the photo and make it as best as possible. Like, a photographer puts their photos out like later on after their wedding or, you know, whatever, because they work on them.
Sure.
So I'll do that a lot. I want to. I usually go from like themes or like colors or locations and then do it that way. Like I'll post like a series of different colors or, you know, stuff like that. Or themes, mm-hmm. like based on events. But yeah, I'll definitely work on a photo for a while.
Wow. Yeah.
Do you ever use your iPad to work on a photo?
I actually don't own an iPad.
Oh, okay.
And I've owned it before, but I sold it. I don't use it, so I don't use my computer either. I stick to
you're my purist.
iPhone. Purist. Yeah,
you are. I'm very much a purist.
Old school.
Yeah.
Hey, one last editing question, Corey. About, as far as detail, do you ever use any sharpening effects to really make your photos pop?
I do. Yeah, I use some sharp ambience is good. Within Snapseed, you can do structure, mm-hmm. Which is really good. Instead of so, if you go and if you have Snapseed, you go to details, and then you can either sharpen or do structure. And structure is a little bit better than sharpening because it doesn't create as much grain in your photo. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'll use that. Or in Afterglow, there's a good clarity tool. It's pretty new. That's pretty good. Or they have sharpening there too.
Awesome.
I don't usually do it too much. I don't want like super HDR look in a photo.
That's another good tip. Don't overprocess your photo, people. Don't overprocess them. They look overprocessed. And I know people are really into HDR. So yeah. HDR a lot of times looks like HDR, and it's just way too much. Yep. Let's wrap up with this question. I think this is really appropriate. You were recently sponsored by T-Mobile.
I was.
They had you just going around taking photos with their crappy Android phone, right?
Yep.
And I know that you go on travel trips a lot and take amazing pictures whenever you're traveling. So I think it's Jorge Q is asking, if you had the opportunity to be sponsored to visit, explore, and document your experience via Instagram in any city or country in the world, where would it be and why?
Yeah, that's the best question I got. I would have to say Iceland for sure.
Oh my gosh, I keep hearing Iceland come up. This is crazy.
Yeah, Sigur Rós, you know, that band is just epic. And they had a documentary called Heima, which they basically went across Iceland and played live shows like within the community and the landscape. It was just epic. And
what was the name of the band?
Sigur Rós.
Okay. I never heard of them.
Yeah, it's kind of more like experimental kind of indie music. And they're from Iceland and they're huge there. But yeah, the landscape in Iceland is just crazy. It reminds me of the Northwest a lot. I think that's why I'd like it.
That would be awesome. I've been to the Iceland airport.
There you go.
Reykjavik, yeah, me too. I had stay over there.
Me too. And I was looking around and I was like, it looks like Middle Earth, man. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I would love to go back. And I know, just as an aside, from Seattle, we have a new airline here called Icelandic Air. And they're just trying to get people to go to Iceland. So their plane tickets are really inexpensive.
Yep.
So if you're listening from Seattle and you want to go to Iceland, Corey, we should do a photo
trip. Hit me up. Yeah,
let's do it. You and me, let's go to Iceland, man. I don't have anyone to travel with.
Yeah.
Leander, you can come too.
Sponsored by Iceland.
Don't even tell your family. Just come along.
It's way too scary. I was so terrified because looking out the window, I could see all these icebergs in the ocean there, and I was just scared out of my mind. It was awful. I'd never gone there again.
Yeah, I kept the window shut. Yeah. Well, hey, that's it for us. Corey, a.k.a. With Hearts. Dude, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no worries, guys.
It's
I love
been
your
awesome.
Podcast.
And let me just say to the people listening out there, it's rare for a photographer to come on and share any secrets at all. Most people are very secretive about how they're doing things, what they're doing, because it's their trademark stuff and they don't want people copying them. So to have Corey come on and share all his tips is really remarkable. Follow him on Twitter. He is at With Hearts. That's just W-I-T-H Hearts. And he's also Instagram.com/withhearts. I don't have to tell you, you're probably following him and not me. And my Instagram is Instagram.com/airfawn. Leander, what's yours?
L. Caney.
And of course, Twitter.
Please follow me.
Follow Leander, please.
Follow, shout out.
And he's Alcaney on Twitter. I'm at Arifon on Twitter.
I'll pay everyone $1 who follows me, okay?
And of course, for all the best news, reviews, and how-tos in the world of Apple, make sure you're following Cult of Mac on Twitter. I want to thank DigiDNA for sponsoring the show. Love those guys. Go check out Discade 6, digidna.net. This has been the CultCast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the CultCast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening. We will see you guys next time. That was awesome.
Cool, yeah. Yeah, very interesting.
That was great, man.
Yeah, you could just talk on days on community, everything. It's crazy.
There's so much great just wisdom in there that you shared. I mean, it's not just photography. Like the thing that you said about being posting every day, right?
Yeah.
It's like consistency is everything. Even if you're not good and you're consistent, you'll build a following.
Exactly, yeah.
In fact, I know
it's with blogging, everything. Yeah.
Yeah. It's with everything. And I know Leander, you could probably definitely speak to that, right? Just being consistent with
you can post any rubbish as long as you do it every day.
Leander, you'll find someone that likes it. Yeah.
And eventually you got millions of them. So it's great. Yeah.
There's enough people out there who are willing to read rubbish that you can literally build your own cult of Mac.
That was Woody Allen's old, you know, his old adage, you know, about succeeding in the movie business was just, you know, it's 90% of it is just showing up.
Yeah.
And I think it's so true. No matter what you do, any field, any endeavor, you just got to show up and do it and do the work.
Yeah. Wasn't it Benjamin Franklin who said it's 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration?
Right. Yeah.
I hope it was Benjamin Franklin or I'm going to sound like a total idiot.
Yep. Just capture.
Yeah. That really shocked me that you said that you took that many images because.
Oh, yeah, dude. It's crazy.
I mean, I do that on my DSLR too. I didn't even get to ask you. Do you actually use a DSLR?
I don't.
You don't even have one.
My goal is for 2013 to get a DSLR camera.
Okay,
and I'm looking at a couple. Yeah.
Okay, which ones are on your list?
I'm looking at the Fuji XE1, step down from the X Pro.
Huh.
I want something that if I'm like traveling or going through a city, like it looks like a film camera, like a media format, but still has like the mirrorless capabilities and, you know, good quality. So
that'd be awesome.
I think I'm gonna go with that. Yeah,
that could be a really good choice. It's great, I think, for your style especially, because you're so methodical in your setup, you know, that I think a camera like that would probably be really good for you. I requested a review unit of the Fuji X100S.
Yep.
I think they're going to send me one in April. I'm really excited. I've actually never shot with a Fuji camera.
Yeah, the brand is actually getting really, really well. They have like interchangeable lens, like prime lenses. Everything's getting pretty nice. And then there's adapters to like, you know, put on other good lenses too. Pretty cool.
Have you ever thought about getting like a camera that's better quality than your iPhone?
Yeah. I've got an Olympus Pen.
Oh, you do? Do you ever use it?
Well, not as much as I should. I mean, I use it when I go to like trade shows and stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, for shooting and if I go out with the kids somewhere special. Mm-hmm. But I don't use it as an everyday camera.
One of the questions that somebody asked along what you're just saying, Leander, is like, is the everyday camera dead? You know, like with these iPhones out there, do you think that we're going to see point and shoots disappear?
I don't know. I think just like the, you know, mid-range, like the mirrorless cameras are so good, like, and those are just getting smaller, so
yeah,
I don't know. I like the iPhone, but I don't know.
Yeah, they're not mid-range at all. I mean, you can take some astonishing pictures with these.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah,
these mirrorless cameras, yeah, they're absolutely beautiful, and they're small enough that they're convenient. I mean, it's not like having a big honking, you know, DSLR pro camera.
Yeah,
You know, they're small enough that they are convenient. I probably should use it more. I just, you know.
It's not with you every day, but you don't use it as much. Yeah.
Yeah, right, totally. And the iPhone takes great pictures, doesn't it? So
it really does, especially when you pair it with one of the amazing apps that are out there. There are so many really, you know, really good apps that you can use to make your photos look way better than they were before.
It was so hard. Like, I'm such an iPhone guy, and then that T-Mobile thing with the Galaxy, dude, that was, like, the hardest thing ever to try to, like, make the photos look decent.
Actually, you know what? Do you mind if we talk a little bit about that? Because you and I spoke about that before, and that's a great point. I mean, taking images on the iPhone is really easy because there's so many great apps out there. What was your experience like shooting with that Android device?
They basically contacted me wanting me to test it because they wanted to, like, kind of reach out to the mobile photographers type thing. So I was like, I basically responded, like, I'm iPhone only, like, like, no. And they're like, well, we'll give you the unit and, like, pay you a little bit to test it out. So I shot with it for a week, and it was terrible, dude. I hate the UI, and it was just hard and kind of clunky, and trying to get a decent photo. Like, the camera is good. It's just how to take the photo, and, like, there's no apps around. Like, in the app stores, there's, like, nothing. It was just so hard. I ended up just using, like, Instagram filters for those photos.
Wow. Well, some Android fans, you know, I mean, some of the new Android cameras have got really high megapixel sensors, right?
Yeah, definitely. The megapixel is good, but just, like, the processing on it, it's just terrible from Android,
And you have way fewer apps to use.
Yeah, no apps at all,
What would you say, as somebody who takes so many pictures with their iPhone, can you tell us some things that you think the iPhone is just not very good at as far as photography is concerned?
There's a couple things. There's, like, especially with iPhone 5, there's, like, light leaks, purple light leaks. That happen a lot if you have, like...
Remember when that was blowing up, Leander? People were super pissed about that. There was that SNL sketch, like, if you point your iPhone directly at the sun, it might turn purple. Sorry, continue, Corey.
So, yeah, that's huge. But basically what I do with that is I'll just, like, use my hand and cover the top of the phone to block some of the light coming in from the top, so it, like, evens out the photo. But, yeah, just making, like, the exposure and taking the photo, I think, is the best way.
Use the flash on your iPhone?
No, never.
Me either. And I know people ask about it. They're like, hey, how can you make the iPhone flash work better on the iPhone? This is one of those experiential things. It looks like crap. There is no way to do it. Yeah. It's not a good flash. I mean, even the pop-up flash on a DSLR is bad. Yeah, like, there are no cameras out there that will help you take a great flash photography photo. Like, that is a whole nother photography discipline. Lighting in itself is one of the most difficult things to master in photography. And if you master it, you will make a ton of money because you'll get, you know, you'll get booked by clients all the time.
It's true.
And it's just understanding the limitations of your gear. And of course, low light shots with the iPhone are also tough.
I guess there's some way to, like, I don't know. Someone was telling me, like, you can, like, focus on a white, like, a piece of paper, and then if you shoot dark, like, it will, like, correct the low lighting. And there's, like, a couple different apps for, like, shooting low light.
Really?
Like, I think it's called, like, Nightcap, I think. That helps out with the grain. It was called Nightcap. I don't remember.
Okay, that's fine. This,
it's Nightcap.
This is the after chat anyway. We're allowed to not remember things. Hey, are you cool with me posting this piece and all the stuff that you said about T-Mobile?
You can, yeah.
Okay. Okay. I just wanted to make sure you were okay with it first because I didn't tell you that I wanted to include this.
Yeah, that's fine.
Of course, oftentimes I never know if I want to include it until I hear what you have to say.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
I'm anti-droid, so that's fine.
Well, I'm not anti-droid. You know, it's like I was saying with my friend earlier, like, he gets so offended. He gets butthurt about this stuff. You know, it's like, he's like, well, at least Google's out there innovating. And he said it in a way that I was like, are you trying to imply that Apple's not innovating with your comment?
They created the market for you to pretend like you're innovating. Like,
yeah.
But there is that. We talked about this before, though, didn't we? There's that strange perception because the software and the hardware has stayed relatively stable, and people equate change with innovation, right? Because there are so many different screen sizes on Android. Oh, yeah. And that's supposed to be innovation.
Terrible.
It is a strange perception, though, that Apple is kind of, you know, has got the battle. I think a lot of people feel that way, that Apple, because it hasn't changed, it's not innovating anymore.
Yeah, I think definitely with, whatever, Forstall leaving, that's going to, like, change a lot with Johnny Ive stepping in and, like, because he was all against that, like, skeuomorphism or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. The apps that kind of relate to, you know, real life scenarios like the Notepad or, you know, stuff like that. So I don't know. I think iOS 7 is going to change a lot, the UI of the iPhone.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm really excited for iOS 7. We actually talked a little bit about it in past shows. And there are some devs that I've heard that are working on it, and they're excited about it. And I was like, if they're excited, it must mean because there are going to be some dramatic changes coming.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good.
Yeah, I hope so. All right, well, this will be the second wrap right here. I love it when I wrap up the show and I'm like, all right. And then we just keep going like nothing ever happened. So if you're still listening, thanks for staying tuned.
See you on Instagram.
See you on Instagram.